Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, and wrapping up the week just as strong as we started it. Holy smokes, what a week we have had. Lots and lots of great guests, great topics, great conversations, and today is going to be no exception. Second hour, the game show returns. We're going to Carla Broussard will be our super secret celebrity guest, and looking forward to just having fun with the game show again. I think I wrote one of the better game shows ever that I've done. Would you agree with that, Darren? You've read it. I think the questions are among the best I've done. And I have no idea why. I've not a clue why. I guess I've recommitted myself to the art of the game show because we haven't done it in so long. This hour, Joe Heschmeyer's here. And we're talking a bit about scandal and how you as a Christian, how I as a Christian, how we as Christians can and should respond to scandal. Joe, of course, is the author of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church, the Catholic Witness of the Fathers in Christianity's First Two Centuries. I emphasize two because, as you know, Constantine didn't come until the fourth century. Hi, Joe.
Hi. How are you doing?
Really good. Thanks for being here.
It's good to be here.
We actually left it as a cliffhanger the last time you were here about whether or not you would come back.
Yeah, I think you expressed some hesitation about having me back on. But as you've committed yourself to the game show, you've not committed yourself to preventing my appearance, so everyone...
That's true. I was working so hard on the game show, I forgot
to get a better guest
to go and report you to the higher ups, and so they wouldn't let you back on the show. So you're here.
We have a very loose anti-bullying policy at Catholic Answers.
Anti-bullying. Yeah, that's right. I'm sorry. That seemed like I was bullying you. I didn't.
I meant in the other direction.
Okay,
but either way.
All right, good.
I assumed that was why you wanted me off the air. So I'm very mean to you on the radio.
Let me tell you a little bit about why I want to talk about scandal.
Yes.
And I'm going to read some stuff, Joe, but I don't think anybody's going to be like, oh, stop reading all that stuff, because I think folks are going to find this interesting.
And maybe good news even.
Yeah, interesting and maybe a little bit of a relief, because I actually had people who I love very much and admire, when this scandal broke last summer, say, what is this about? Like, what mm-hmm. is going on here? It just feels endless sometimes as a Catholic. These scandals and whatnot. And so this scandal I'm referring to is the scandal of the Indigenous schools in Canada. That were
specifically the Kamloops Indian Reservation School.
Which was run by an order of Catholic nuns, if I remember. I don't think that
one. I believe that's correct.
But then there were different schools that people said different things about. But this report came out that there were 215 children, some as young as 3 years old, buried in unmarked graves. And the story became a worldwide scandal for Catholics mm-hmm. and also kind of became an icon of the mistreatment of Indigenous people, which, by the way, I do not doubt at all, the mistreatment
right.
of Indigenous people. I mean, in many, many circumstances. But now new reporting, some history professors and some journalists reporting on this saying, I mean, you see a headline in the Federalist that says something like, I'd have to paraphrase
it. I have the headline,
so
actually.
So read the whole headline, will you?
Well, it's a great piece. I'd really recommend it by John Daniel Davidson. And the piece is called Not One Corpse Has Been Found in the Mass Grave, in quotation marks, of Indigenous Children in Canada. And his whole point, and this is quite shocking, is that there was a whole protracted, several months long international scandal about 200 or 300 children whose bodies had been found at this residential school in British Columbia. And now we discover what actually happened is there were rumors that there were children buried and that they did some ground penetrating radar and they found what were either children or tree branches or, I mean, roots
yeah.
or rocks or any number of other things that are also found in the ground. And so based on that, even the person who did it,
this is the thing. Yeah. This is the thing that I found so interesting. And you know what? Now that we're discussing it, I realize I don't have to read it. You gave such a good encapsulation of it. But the woman who's she's called a conflict archaeologist. That mm-hmm. is, do archaeology in places where there has been conflict, and mm-hmm. that's a way you can kind of unearth. They do it in, for example, Bosnia Herzegovina, where you dig up a mass grave and you can as an archaeologist use your skills as an archaeologist to piece together what happened, who did what to whom, and this can be very, very helpful and set the historical record straight and also resolve criminal matters in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
So she's a conflict archaeologist and she did this scan of the ground. She said 215 possible grave sites.
And it was in the soil near an apple orchard, which also I think is probably relevant in terms of reasons the ground could be disrupted around an apple orchard,
like the
apple trees.
But then people were saying things, well, children as young as 3 years old in these graves. Mm-hmm. And she says, I don't know how old these children are. I just did a scan, a radar scan. And it turns out no one excavated, no one looked, and no one knows if there's even a single child buried in an unmarked grave at this school.
It's actually quite a remarkable, to go from 300 victims to maybe no victims.
Maybe zero. Now, that is not to say there are, you know, any boarding school, there are children who are victimized at boarding schools, you know, and certainly indigenous people in the Americas have in many ways been victimized. I'm not denying any of that.
Specifically, the residential school system was very controversial because it was an attempt to simultaneously take indigenous people, First Nations people, and make them loyal Canadians and Christians. And there was a whole mix and kind of mess of motives. And even when the best of motives were present, you're still taking kids away from their families, often without the family's consent. And, it's a messy, unhappy situation for a lot of reasons.
But
we wouldn't do things the same way
but
today.
But the reasonable question here is this an icon of that abuse, or is this an icon of a world media and political establishment that will accept any story that goes with the narrative it wants to tell?
Yeah, because it's possible for both of those things to be true. I mean, in the 1980s, you had this whole phenomenon of fake abuse scandals in preschools.
And people went to prison for these things and had never done a thing.
And so simultaneously, two things were going on. There were actual cases of widespread abuse that were going unreported or ignored or covered up. And there were like people being sent to prison over fake abuse, things that had literally never happened, but where the police and parents had freaked out and had badgered kids until they said they'd been abused. And you know, like you could have both a genuine scandal in one place and a genuine like witch hunt over nothing in another place. Like there's no reason it has to be one or the other. We can say real bad things have happened, but that doesn't make every allegation real. It doesn't make every tragedy true.
Right. And it doesn't, there's a kind of a tendency to have a certain narrative of who's a victim and who's the victimizer. And you're very willing to accept evidence that fits with that narrative and very dismissive of evidence that counters it. And the evidence of that is that, you know, the New York Times and the Washington Post have not reported on the fact that this story has been overturned or turned on its head. I'm not saying that it's not true. It's possible that there are children buried at an indigenous school. It's entirely possible. There's just no evidence in the way that it was presented as there was evidence. As a matter of fact, the Prime Minister of Canada, himself a Catholic, Justin Trudeau, demanded that the Pope come to Canada and personally apologize on Canadian soil to indigenous people for this particular crime, for which there is now no evidence. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if Mr. Trudeau will be apologizing to Pope Francis. I'm not sure about that. And I would be perfectly fine if Pope Francis went and said, as the father, as the papa of the Catholic family, I really am sorry about tons of things that happened in the name of the church here.
Right.
That'd be fine. But I'm talking about the Trudeau asked for an apology for this particular crime, for which, as I repeat, there seems to be no evidence.
So I think it's important to draw two things that kind of point in opposite directions. And we've kind of alluded to at least one or both of them. On the one hand, the media really does have stories. It has narratives and kind of meta narratives. And it likes to have stories that fit neatly into this with a particular type of victim, a particular type of perpetrator. And we, you know, without stepping on too many landmines, the George Zimmerman case, when he was described as a white Hispanic, that was putting him into a box. Because, Hispanic on black crime does not sell papers in the same way that white on black crime does.
Right.
That's a savvy media move. They're shaping a story rather than reporting one. Likewise, the outbreaks of anti-Asian violence in New York were presented as, you know, white supremacy sparked by President Trump's rhetoric. But then it turned out that most of the assailants weren't white. And that story, again, kind of fell apart when you got into the details. But in saying all of that, like, on the one hand, that this is a real thing. The media will invent or distort or shape a story in a certain way. On the other hand, real abuses do happen.
Oh, we have learned that in the Catholic Church.
You know, the
we
fact
have
that, like,
that.
So this is, I think, squarely what's worth grappling with right now.
Right.
Is what do we do when these cases kind of arise? So if I can pivot us a little bit, you've got an abuse case, right? You get the concrete situation of an abuse case. Monsignor X is accused of having committed some horrible act of sexual violence against a kid or a teenager 20 years ago. This person, now an adult, brings an accusation against him. And there's just no evidence other than he said, she said, or he said, he said. In those situations, like, what should a Christian do in response? And I think it's really worth tangling with that question, because these are real life things that happen. I see people handle them, in my view, very badly, quite frequently.
Our number is 888-317-884. If you'd like to get involved in the conversation, we're talking about scandal, and we've been through so many scandals as a Catholic Church in recent decades that there's maybe a kind of a little bit of trauma around that for many, many Catholics, and many, of course, have left the Church because of it. And then you have an instance like this in which what appears to be just another instance of, oh, what did we do this time? Or what did ours do this time? That it turns out to be a fury without evidence that seems to have been embraced uncritically by people whose job is to be critical of those things and make sure that they're correct. This is in no way, I think, to say that the Catholic Church is just some victim. We're not just, I don't want to just turn the victim narrative around. That's not the point. The point is, as Christian people, what are we supposed to do about all of this? In an atmosphere of immense confusion as far as media goes, polarization in the media, so that we have the New York Times reporting news, but always the New York Times is reporting the news in the context of defending a narrative of the modern world that is what we might call the New York Times view of the world. So, and that's the same with the Washington Times as well. You know, if you want to take someone on the other side, that narrative, come on, there's no such thing as objective reporting without narrative, unless you're just sheerly, I don't know, saying it's daytime outside when it's daytime. There are facts, but narrative colors everything. So your calls are welcome. 888-318-7884. We'll take a quick break and right back with the continued conversation on what to do about scandal and how to respond to scandal as a Christian.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
From Rome to your home, EWTN's Vatican Bureau lets you watch all of the important events from Rome, even if you don't have a TV. Using the latest technology, we've made it possible to watch the latest news from the Holy See, all delivered directly to your home. It's easy. Watch live on EWTN YouTube and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. EWTN, the Global Catholic Network.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious mystic monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All mystic monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase mystic monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Joe Heschmeyer here in studio with us. Joe's out here in San Diego with us, so that's why we're getting to spend a lot of good time with Joe. And we really have enjoyed the time. Joe,
yeah, I've really enjoyed the time, too.
Yeah.
This is almost as good as being at the beach right now, which is,
Is that where your wife and kids are? Are they,
probably.
Are they at the beach?
They were talking about going to Coronado after they toured the office.
One of the nice things about these Friday shows, too, we've taken this view for several years now, is gives us more of an opportunity to have more expansive conversations and also do fun things like the game show, which we'll do next. And so let me throw one more thing into the mix, then we'll go to some calls. Because I feel like there's a certain way that if you're a Christian person, you know that the narrative of the modern world is always involves anti-Christian propaganda. You know, like with even the word like the Dark Ages or the medieval period, a modern is what brought us out of that Christian era. It's a lie.
It's the Enlightenment claiming that they were the Enlightenment.
Right. All of which is a lie. All of which is propaganda. It never happened. But there's this. But that's the claim. Okay. Yeah. So you know, as a Christian, that you always have to be editing whatever is being presented as a neutral, as neutral presentation of the facts of life in the modern world. You always have to be editing it because there is no neutral presentation. You know, if I'm watching a news report on marriage, I'm not going to get a reasoned Christian right. view along with a reasoned progressive view. I'm going to get the progressive view and then criticism of the Christian view. Mm-hmm. That's what I get. So I'm watching
or of something being presented as the Christian view that you would maybe not recognize.
Baloney. Yeah, right. Yeah, that's just some kind of exaggerated, almost cartoon view. Yes. So I'm watching Nova, which I've always liked Nova, but I also know what Nova is. I mean, Nova is a TV show on PBS, which is going to be progressive, modernist, and not particularly amenable to Christianity. That's mm-hmm. what it is. So I'm watching Nova, and it's about the Maya people. It's about the Maya civilization. You know, this great Mayan civilization. And why did it disappear? Well, I can tell you before I even watch the show that why it disappeared is going to have a lot to do with what PBS would like me to know about the world today. Like, they're going to talk about climate change. They're going to talk about overpopulation. They're going to talk about European values destroying the native people. I just know it. But I want to see this thing because it's interesting about the Maya people. So they do all the things that I said. And then they say at one point, you know, they're talking about these great Maya temples. And they say very much after they've criticized everything Europeans ever did in the New World, mm-hmm. and they've really kind of insinuated that Europeans are kind of a pestilence on the New World. Then they say, just in hushed tones, as if nothing, we'll just mention this in passing. Of course, there was blood sacrifice on these temples. And then they go on, I wanted to pause. What's blood sacrifice? Yeah,
who's blood?
What exactly?
Animals?
And I actually didn't know for a minute, because I don't know the history of the Maya like I know the Aztecs. Mm-hmm. And so I know what blood sacrifice. If you talk about the Aztecs, I'd say, no, we're murdering thousands of people today. Right. But what does it mean, blood sacrifice? And then just casually, a few minutes later, this professor from some Central American university says, you know, of course, yeah, there was human sacrifice on these temples. And then we just go on and we talk about how beautiful Mayan culture was, all of which is true. But what we did here was we presented a narrative where is this beautiful, peaceful people, the Maya, occasional blood sacrifice, were destroyed and disrupted by this rapacious and evil European interloper. And I want to say, excuse me.
Right.
Like, blood sacrifice, that's a big deal. The fact that this was a civilization that at the center of its religion was human sacrifice. So I don't want to exonerate the Europeans. I mean, there was a lot of bloodthirsty. I mean, the Pizarro brothers were horrors, murderers and thieves and all that. Well, okay, fine. But why are we pretending like one group is angels and the other group is devils when that's clearly not the truth?
We need to learn to be able to tell complicated stories. You know,
complicated stories. That's it, Joe. Thank you.
You know, like we have to oversimplify the narrative, or we think we do, and totally whitewash one side. And the truth is, not only is reality very rarely like that, but also it really makes for a less interesting history. I get why people get exhausted with that.
Right, right.
You know, it reminds me of all things of The Power and the Glory by Graham Greene.
Yeah,
right. Where it depicts there a very bad priest who is still trying to stay faithful. He's an alcoholic. He has a kid out of wedlock, but he's trying to hold on to his faith at a time when Mexico had outlawed Catholicism. And this is contrasted with these golden saint books that this little kid is reading, where the saints have done nothing wrong and they have these very kind of whitewashed narratives. And the kid in the story is totally unmoved by hearing these like really sterilized stories of the saints, where you don't get any of the flaws, any of the humanity in that sort of sense. And then he sees this heroic witness of a very broken priest. And that's what moves him. And I think we need to remember that, you know?
Right, like, I had forgotten
I've totally ruined the ending of that story. I'm sorry for everyone who thought they were going to get it. It's still worth reading.
Graham Greene is one of those guys, you just read him for the sentences.
Yeah.
They're so beautiful. Don't worry about that. The story will work itself out.
In the case of the priest, it was a death sentence.
Okay, don't make a pun about art, Joe. All right, so, but your point.
Yeah. Yeah, so my point is that history doesn't read the way the whitewashed version does. That you don't need to pretend that, you know, the Maya or the Aztec civilizations were totally immaculate to be able to give a
fair account.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I studied both briefly in college. And one thing that just always sticks with me is that the Spanish arrived a very small force and conquered one of the largest empires in the world. In the world at that time, there were like 1 million people. And in terms of the Aztecs. So it's like, well, why? Well, it turned out something like 100 to 150,000 indigenous people were like, we don't know who you are, but we know who the Aztecs are, so we're on your team.
Yeah, we're pretty sure the devil we don't know in this case is better than the one we do.
Exactly. Because, yeah. I mean, if you look at like a map of where the Aztecs had grown, they'd grown around civilizations so they could hunt them for sacrifice. I mean, just horrendous. I mean, imagine living your life surrounded and just knowing that it was probably a matter of time, you know, that sort of thing. Were there abuses with the colonizers? Of course there were. Likewise in Canada, likewise with the story of any people, you're going to have, I mean, when you look at the history of anyone, you will not, you know, any group you can't give a whole history of the horrors that have been committed by that group is a group that's either very small or didn't leave a lot of written records. That's it.
Yeah. So I almost feel like part of the, if we're going to answer our own question, and then I'm going to go to the phones, it does seem like part of your answer to the question how to deal with scandal is that an adult response always is ready for a fully complicated story, one that includes sin. We don't want to rule out the fact that a bishop might have sinned or a pope might have sinned or you or I, Joe. You know, we don't want to rule that out. No, the church would never do that and have that kind of attitude. But we do want to be ready to say, all right, let me reserve judgment until I have a sense of the complications here.
Yeah,
intricacies.
Exactly. Like the story Christianity presents is one of broken heroes. Yeah. You read the Bible and you look at King David or you look at any of the figures, you look at the apostles, and they do bad stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, the worst betrayer is one of the apostles.
Yeah.
And if
the second worst is one of the apostles.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, that sort of thing is something we need to be ready for, and which our religion is, but which we often maybe psychologically aren't.
Right.
Because we can still gloss over all of the bad parts and just want to present the good parts. And when you do that, when the bad parts bubble up to the surface, people's faith gets rocked.
Yeah.
If your case for Catholicism is we all get along and nothing bad ever happens, that's not going to last 30 seconds after the person becomes Catholic. And so instead, it has to be a real warts and all. Like, yeah, look, bad stuff has happened, is happening, will happen, and Christ is working amidst all of this in sometimes mysterious ways.
Yeah.
And that doesn't, in saying that, I'm not saying therefore it doesn't matter. I'm saying like therefore the bad stuff is not the end of the story. It's part of the story. It's an important part of the story. It's part of the betrayal that leads to the Good Friday, that leads to Easter Sunday, but it's not the end of the story. And that's the kind of the perennial thing. So I'd say like we need to learn to be able to hear that and tell those stories. Because, of course, like you got 1 billion Catholics. That's like 1 out of every 6, 1 out of every 7 people on earth.
Right.
You're going to have some scandals. You're going to have some controversies. Every possible crime that could be committed has been committed by one of us.
Yeah, right. That's right. And is currently.
And is probably
and,
currently
and
being,
on and on until the Lord returns. But all of that, Joe, I believe, I think that this Canadian schools story shows also happens in the context in which a counter-narrative to Christianity is looking for evidence that Christianity is false. And so we have to not just say, hey, stories are complicated, but say stories are complicated and there is an active effort to delegitimize and replace Christianity in much of the media.
Yes, and one of the ways they're doing that is by telling these very uncomplicated, very simple morality tips.
Yeah, right.
Of the, you know, the noble savage and the vile oppressor. Like those are, they're established motifs.
Yes, indeed. And they're, and all that, and when you say, I just want to say this, when you say the noble savage. You know, that's like the
yes. I'm not endorsing the word savage. I'm using the actual phrase.
No, but like I enjoy watching the Maya thing, just because the Maya people are beautiful, mm-hmm. and the art that they're able to produce, and the way they arrange their culture and do their agriculture in settings where other people can't do it, you know, they're brilliant. And mm-hmm. because that's the human story. I don't need to tear down the Maya in order to say this story has some complications.
It does.
Darrell in Houston, Texas, listening on Catholic Answers Live. You're up next, Darrell. Go ahead with your question or comment for Joe.
Good evening, good afternoon, guys. A great show.
Thank you. Oh no. Did I do that really? Darrell, I put you on right as we were going to the break because I was so enwrapped in the conversation. Can you hang on just, 45 seconds?
Sure.
Okay, I apologize. I'm really sorry. I wasn't paying attention. Right back with more on how to deal with scandal as a Christian with Joe Heschmeyer on Catholic Answers Live.
Have you enrolled in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics? Let me ask you a more important question. Do you believe as a Catholic that you have an obligation to share the Catholic faith? In fact, the Church has answered this question, and the answer is that all confirmed Catholics are obliged to share the faith. It's actually in canon law. Catholic Answers is here to help you fulfill that obligation. Our School of Apologetics courses will equip you to help all the people you come in contact with understand what the Church teaches and why. A great place to start is with all the Catholics in your life. Learn the art of apologetics from the best of the best and start sharing the gospel today. Visit schoolofapologetics.com. That's schoolofapologetics.com. Here's a question. Is it really possible to be friends with someone who died 2,000 years ago? Maybe the problem is that we've grown way too comfortable with the story of Jesus. Nice man, right? Taught us to love one another, said not to judge people. We celebrate his birthday every year. It's time to put away this small, safe version of Jesus, says Cy Kellett. Nobody that bland could have transformed the world. In A Teacher of Strange Things, Cy presents Jesus Christ undiluted by sentiment, with all his radical words and deeds uncensored. Do you know someone, your son or daughter perhaps, or maybe your mom or dad, who needs the friendship of Jesus Christ? Do you? Order your copy of A Teacher of Strange Things by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Monday on More to Life, stressed to the max.
Is stress getting the better of you? We'll help you regain control and reclaim your peace.
That's Monday on More to Life. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Enjoying the Friday here. I hope you are. We're glad you're here with us on a Friday afternoon, or maybe a Friday evening, or maybe even a Saturday morning where you are. We're talking a bit about how to deal with scandal. That is a Christian approach to scandal, which I guess at root, Joe, that means a charitable, because everything we do must be governed by charity. Mm-hmm. So how to have a charitable approach to scandal, but not a foolish one, an intelligent one. Darrell in Houston, I let him say like one word and then the music started, and I apologize for that, Darrell. Go ahead with your question or comment.
All right, guys. Thanks for bringing me back. So scandal, when I think scandal, I mean, in terms of Catholics or Catholicism, I think of it in two ways. It, like a non-denominational person or evangelical, they'll think about some scandal of a pastor at their specific church, mm-hmm. and that's it. And so as long as their church doesn't have anything going on, then they're at the perfect church. But the second that there's a story about a priest in anywhere in the world, then that is like doom over the entire Catholic Church around the whole world. So it's like we're constantly responding to The priest in Antarctica did this. The priest in Alaska did this. We constantly have to keep responding over and over and over, as if there is an inherent institutional flaw in Catholicism itself. So it's like, how do you deal with this? With that, it seems really it's tough. I personally think it's tough.
Yeah, Darrell, I think you're absolutely right. Let's flesh out a few things. One, you're right about just the sheer size and scope, because right now we're not just dealing with like the billion Catholics living today. We're also dealing with allegations against dead Catholics. You know, this person says a generation or two ago, something bad happened to them at the hands of a priest. That priest may be dead and gone, but you know, what they did or are alleged to have done is something we're still answering for anywhere in the world, two generations on. And you're right. Like, if you were to just take all of the sins committed by any group of a billion people, they're going to be massive. They're going to be overwhelming, and they're going to be like too big for us to bear. And that's ironically like something Christianity's always known, that Christ in the garden is seeing all of the sins of humanity, and that's the chief suffering. Like, he carries this tremendous weight. And right now, with the rise of mass media and communications, we're able to know what's going on everywhere in the world by everyone. And it is this shocking and often overwhelming thing. I mean, even leaving aside the scandal, even leaving aside the church for a minute right now, the sheer gravity of human suffering that you can be awakened to just by reading world news, just by reading about murders around the world or crises or bad governments or fill in the blank, it really is depressing. It really is overwhelming. And we're not psychically prepared for that. Like, it's just something we should know. And I can tell you intellectually, like, it doesn't make any sense, you know, to judge an entire group of a billion people, or even more, to judge Christ's promise of founding the church based on the sins of the worst members you can find within that church, because it's obviously it's unfair. But nevertheless, even though we know that's unfair, it's totally understandable why that would happen, right? Like, it's totally understandable why reading that, you just get really depressed and think, why didn't someone do something? Or why, when they did do something, did they consistently do the wrong thing? So I think we should recognize that even though we can kind of explain it or explain it away, we shouldn't be too quick to do so. We should recognize the real weight of the awfulness. In the same way that, like, if you spend all day listening to like true crime, you might be like depressed or like upset with the world, or just think like the world is an awful and horrible and dismal place because you're looking at all of the worst aspects of humanity, all the worst sides of things. Does that contextualize it at all, Darrell?
Yeah, it's just it's a reality, and we just have to try to take it all in stride as best we can.
Yeah, well, so can I give you maybe a few tips that I've got to talk about this that I give places, and I kind of suggest a few things not to do and a few things to do. So the things I say not to do first are to respond in anger. It's very easy to get defensive when, you know, your church is being attacked. This is your mother. And second, it's very easy to get into this real explaining mode that we just dump a bunch of facts. Well, you know, actually, the abuse rate in Catholic churches is actually lower. That doesn't work at all. No one is persuaded. No one is convinced.
Yeah.
Even if all that's true.
The we abuse fewer children than you do argument is just not one. That
right.
Yeah.
There's like a tiny handful of people who legitimately think that the Catholic Church has a higher abuse rate than everyone else. And you can be like, no, that's not true. Here, there's a ton of data that says that's not true. But that's not the heart of even their objection. And so, yeah, like if it really matters in that situation, pull that out. But usually that's not what you need. So I suggest that like three ingredients to a better approach. Number one is to get behind the question, to read the person. So Jesus is really great at this, not surprisingly, right? And so I would look to John 11 in the story of Lazarus, with the death of Lazarus. There's a theological problem. Like, why did this tragedy happen on Jesus's watch? And Mary and Martha both ask the same question. They both say, Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died. Now, when Martha asks it, she's asking it as a theological question. And so Jesus responds in a theological way. He explains her about the resurrection. He explains he is the resurrection. And it's really beautiful. But it's nothing compared to the next conversation. Mary falls at the feet of Jesus, is weeping, and says verbatim the same thing. You know, Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died. And Jesus doesn't respond in that way because she's not asking a theological question. And instead, we're told in verse 33 of John 11 that when Jesus sees her weeping, he is moved in spirit and he's troubled. In other words, he doesn't get into explainer mode. He doesn't, you know, talk theology with her. He stops and has this very human encounter in this tragedy with her. And then he weeps with her. And we can sometimes be so quick to rush to explaining the facts and figures that we forget to do that part. Now, on the other hand, there are also people who aren't approaching in a good-natured way like Mary and Martha are. And so you have, for instance, in Matthew 21, when the enemies of Jesus pose a question to him, not because they're trying to find out the actual answer, but because they're trying to trap him. And what does Jesus do? He doesn't play ball. He refuses to answer their question. So you should know, like, try to understand, why is this person asking the question? And the more you can kind of answer them and not just the question, like to get to them, to get to the heart of the person asking it, the better that conversation's going to go. That's the first of like the three major points. But that's just maybe just the one I'd leave with you of how I think we can kind of go about having that conversation. Because you're right, there will be no shortage for the rest of your life of cases in which people can find bad things Catholics have done that they don't have to trump up, that they don't have to like skew, that are just actually bad things Catholics have done.
Darrell?
Yes, sir.
That all makes sense to you?
Yes, sir. I appreciate it. Thank you.
I really appreciate your point, too, because, I mean, there's an upside to being a worldwide universal church, but there's a downside to it,
yeah,
which is one Catholic, you know. There used to be this thing back in the 70s that became kind of almost like a joke before we had the internet and there could be internet jokes, but it would be, there'd be a serial killer and the thing they'd report about him on the news, former altar boy, you know, Bob Smith killed 8 people. And there was this former altar boy thing. Yeah. No one ever goes, you know, like former public school student or for this. Right. You'd always focus on this one thing, that this guy was used to be an altar boy and now he killed people.
And if you've ever met altar boys, it's like, nah, I'm not shocked.
Now stop saying that. No, it's just this idea that you know, you can subtly select which fact to highlight. And then all of a sudden it looks like, well, what, these altar boys, they're just producing serial killers.
I mean,
when none of that is at
this
all
is right. Literally how anti-Semites work.
Exactly.
They're just like, oh, yeah, Here's this person who owns a company and he's Jewish. And it's just, yeah, like, if you highlight that every time it comes up,
yeah, right,
people are like, wow. Because here's what the thing, like, your mind looks for patterns and your, yeah, brain is like, it's, right, wired for this.
Yeah.
And so if someone constantly highlights one detail and points out someone else has that detail, yeah, this is also why horoscopes work, because people are like, oh, I've met like 5 bad Sagittariuses. And you're like,
yeah, right,
yeah, that's random. That doesn't matter. Like, that's not why that you just don't get along with people or whatever.
We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more on dealing with scandal as a Christian with Joe Heschmeyer.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
I still have my sanity because of EWTN and listening to your station. Everybody needs to listen to positive things. If you only listen to the negative things, it just gets very bad. If it weren't for your uplifting and wonderful people that conduct your programs, I don't know if I could still be not crying.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Second hour, Carla Broussard going to be here, and we're going to do the game show. Haven't done the game show in a while. We have contestants, Darren. Are there going to be actual contestants? Yes, we have contestants. Do we have prizes, Sarah? Do you think we'll have prizes for the game show? Sarah doesn't know. Well, it would be our have contestants. That's the main thing. Then we'll see about prizes. The number here is 888-318-7884. We started off by talking about that the news that has come out that the claims that were made about Indigenous children being found in unmarked graves in Catholic schools in Canada were wildly exaggerated. It's just come out in the last few days. In some cases, beyond exaggerated.
It wasn't like there were more bodies than we expected. It's like we didn't find any bodies.
Yeah, yeah. Like there were 215 at the Kamloops school, and no one has uncovered a single child at that. And that's the school that started it all. So months later, not a single body of a child found where we were told there were 215 in mass graves. In other places where these claims were made, it now turns out that these were actual cemeteries. It's just that the did you read about that one?
Some of the headstones.
But they had given them wooden crosses,
right.
And so the wooden crosses had degraded. But they're recorded as burial places. They're not unmarked graves in that sense.
weren't originally unmarked.
No, they were given a funeral and buried like everybody else. It's just that the crosses deteriorated. So that story is turning out to not be what it is. So we're talking about how to be a Christian and when these scandals are reported, and not be defensive, I suppose, and not be uncharitable, certainly, but also to be as clever as what's a good clever animal?
A fox.
A fox. Even while we're as gentle as, I don't know, what? What are you going to say?
Dove.
Dove. All right. You went with Jesus, the same animals Jesus went with. Good policy.
Yeah, I know.
Harrison is St. Paul, safe. Minnesota, watching on Twitch. We're glad to have you, Harrison. What do you got to say to Joe?
Hi.
Hi, Harrison.
I have a question about the scandals in the church because I'm not a Catholic yet. I've called onto the show a few times, but you know, when I hear about the scandals, it kind of discourages me to join the church. And I know it's not like I don't believe the Catholic Church is true. It's just like I worry about kind of like the future of my family. Like, what if this did happen? Because it seems like it's a prevalent thing. But I'm also confused because is this just because like the media kind of says, you know, talks about these scandals all the time because the Catholic Church is the biggest church and these things kind of just flow out the most because it's the biggest church and a lot of media covers the Catholic Church. And I don't know, I'm just curious about how...
I don't think either of us would claim that. I mean, I think we want to admit that real problems happened and probably will continue to happen in some regards. But I mean, we had some very bad decisions by bishops, sometimes by whole bishops' conferences, and some very bad behavior by priests. So we don't want to deny that.
Well, I think, so if I'm understanding your question is in part about the relative rate, is that right? Like, was this worse in the church than other places?
I kind of phrased that wrong. It's happening for sure. I'm just wondering, like, I don't know. I don't know. It just like I'm just discouraged about it. And
I'm sorry, maybe, Harrison.
I share your discouragement about it in a lot of ways.
I'd
say a few things. I know I just said like don't trot out a bunch of facts and figures about, you know, comparative rates. But if your concern is that, if your concern is it seems uniquely bad here, I would just say the news is worse. It's not. I mean, I kind of wish it was in some ways. What you have in the case of the church, getting back to what Jarrell said earlier in the hour, you've got a billion people in a pretty organized system. And so for a lot of reasons, that matters for reporting. You know, if you say the Catholic Church did something in Ireland, that's a story in America in a way that, like, this small Hindu group in India did the same thing. That's not a story because we don't have a connection to that story. That's, I think, one big part of it.
Because everybody knows a Catholic. Pretty much everybody somewhere knows a Catholic or has a Catholic church.
Right.
Yeah.
So. Right. And so it just is more newsworthy because people relate to it in a bigger way. Second, in terms of things like lawsuits, there were a lot more lawsuits involving the church because if you've got these kind of pop-up Protestant churches and then they go away within a generation, there's nobody to sue, even for legitimate abuse that happened. And so for a lot of reasons, the church was more of the story, was more of the target, and a lot of it was being driven by the media, and a lot of it was being driven by lawyers. In the case of Pennsylvania, I went back and looked at the work of Carol Shakeshaft, who looks at educator abuse. And her research from around the same time period in Pennsylvania suggests that educator abuse was worse, that like your kid was safer with the local priest on average than with their teacher or, you know, the person working in the public school on average. Now, I'm not saying that to indict everyone in the public school system. I'm saying that to say the problems that this highlights are near universal problems that any large group of people is going to face them, which is both they're going to have predators and you're going to have cover-ups. So one of the things Shake Shack found is something like 11% of educators said they would report the abuse of a kid by a fellow educator. That's not a high enough number. It needs to be 100%, not 11%. So the basic elements for why the abuse scandal happened, there are predators and there are people who don't know what to do if predation happens and they don't do the courageous thing. That was present in the church. That was certainly present in the church. That still is, but to a lesser degree, present in the church and also in every large organization, unfortunately. So, yeah, I mean, that is something that's worth being discouraged by. As you've also kind of alluded to, it's not inconsistent with the church being the one true church. John 6, verse 70, Jesus says, "Did I not choose you, the 12, and one of you is a devil?" Like, he really confronts us with the fact that, hey, don't forget I chose the apostle Judas, and he's bad. So it's a twofold encouragement. One, to not whitewash genuine evil. He doesn't say, Judas isn't so bad, I chose him. He says he's a devil. He doesn't whitewash him at all. On the flip side, he also doesn't say, well, if one of you is a devil, you should give up. You know, so clearly we can call out the real evil and real corruption in the church and still believe the church is who Jesus says she is.
Yeah, Harrison, what do you think?
Yeah, that was good. I'm so thankful for that. I kind of phrased my question very strangely. I didn't really gather my thoughts totally, but I'm very thankful for that.
Well, did you feel like we addressed what you wanted to address, though? Because you can rephrase it if you...
Yeah.
Oh, you did.
For the most part. I mean...
All right.
Cause yeah, like, I mean, there's also... Can I just say one more
thing?
Yeah,
please.
That's okay.
Yes, it is okay.
Because some people say, like, oh, just go over to the east, you know? It's, you know, totally fine over there, and there's no scandals, because, you know, but I feel like the grass isn't greener on the other side, so, yeah. It's just one of those things that's happening everywhere.
I believe... Rod Dreher kind of experienced that firsthand. He was a Catholic reporter who covered a lot of the scandal stuff, and it really rocked his faith. Understandably, I mean, he was breaking a lot of these stories, and he went east, and I think he was kind of disheartened to find out that they have their scandals too. They just aren't making headlines in the same way. Even Mount Athos, you know, one of these famous monasteries, probably the most famous monastery in all of Orthodoxy. There are scandals there. You know, like you're not going to escape human depravity and sin and corruption. And that's the discouraging in some ways fact, but something we need to kind of grapple with, honestly.
Harrison,
okay.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm just thankful for, you guys answering those questions.
Sure. Well, I'm thankful for your call. Now, you've called several times. You're thinking about coming into the church. I just want to get a kind of an estimate from you. How many more calls until you come into the Catholic Church? Like, how many calls are you?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay.
No, how many more books do you want?
Yeah,
let's send you some books.
Have we sent you any books before?
I have a few Trent Horn books on my shelf. And
no, we want you to become Catholic. We need to send you something better than that. How about we send you Joe's book, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church?
Just kidding. Trent's book is great.
Sure, that'd be great.
Okay, hang on, Harrison. And call back again. We like talking with you.
Okay, awesome. Thank you.
Let's go to Ken in Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening on Holy Family Radio. Harrison, don't hang up. I'm going to put you on hold here real quick. Ken in Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening on Holy Family Radio, you are up next. Please go ahead with your question, or maybe it's just a comment for Joe Heschmeyer.
Hi, Joe. Hi, Cy. Hey, yeah, my comment on the topic is that, sure, a lot of people point to Catholicism and all the scandals, but that's because they hold us to a higher standard. Mm-hmm. So how do we... And I've heard you say this before, Cy, and maybe some of your guests in the past, that it's a human problem, not a Catholic problem. But how do we vocalize that? What resources can we draw to tell people that, that you know, it's a human problem, not a church problem?
Yeah, can I maybe take a two-part approach to that?
Yeah, please.
One, I think it's okay that we're held to a higher standard. No, I think people often hold us to an unreasonably high standard that doesn't permit the presence of sin, and that's a problem. You know, if I said, like, priests kill fewer people than gang members, that's no one's impressed by that.
Right. We're not holding the gang members to the same standard.
Right, right. Yeah. Like, that sort of thing, it comes off as an extremely lame defense. Now, I know I just said to Harrison in the last call that this is true, because the only role I see that serving is if someone thinks that this is a uniquely Catholic problem. And to that extent, just pull up any data on educator abuse, pull up any data, you know, on the prevalence of these things, the church was not uniquely bad. But there still is a uniquely Catholic twist to the problem, which is that it was very easy for us to prize looking holy over being holy.
Oh,
and
right.
Every
well
time that happens, the devil is at the door. And we can do that in our own lives. You can live a double life. You know, if you're struggling with pornography and pretending like you're not, you're doing that. If you've got a problem in-house in a church organization and you're just pretending it's not there because you don't want to get bad press, you're doing that. And that's something that, ironically, religious groups are more prone to because we're afraid we're going to scandalize people with the reality of human sin. And that's bad theology, and that's bad PR, and that's just spiritually a death trap. So I would say in that sense, there's a specifically Catholic lesson that we can learn, which is be holy, don't pretend to be holy.
Ken, what do you think?
Yeah. Can I have a follow-up?
Please.
Can I have a follow-up?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yes, that was a yes.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. So, and maybe you covered this already, but so people do say that it is systemic in the hierarchy, in the structure of the church,
yeah.
Maybe that's enough to go with that, Joe.
Okay, may I take that one?
Please.
Because I actually am more and more convinced that this might actually be true, Ken, that I am one of those, and this is just my opinion. This is nobody else's, doesn't belong to Catholic Answers or anything. I think dioceses, the way that Christ intended the diocese to be, is much smaller than what we have now. I mean, when you have a diocese, you know, that's got 5 million people in it, then the bishop really doesn't have day-to-day contact with the people. And I do believe that Christ meant the shepherds to be among the people. So I think we really do have to be serious as Catholics and start thinking about the structure. I mean, not the structure of let's throw out what Christ gave us, but are we living out the hierarchical structure of the church that Christ himself gave us in the way that Christ wants us to live it out? And I have my questions about that. But Joe, every time I say something I think is smart, you straighten me out. So
go ahead. I always mention I lived in Italy just so people can be impressed. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, but right. In Italy, the dioceses are much smaller. And so it's a different experience. North Africa, there were hundreds of dioceses in the early church. And so every local little town had their own bishop.
Yeah.
And of course he knew people. He knew everybody by name, those kind of things. And so we have lost a fair amount of that. Now, some of that is inescapable. Urbanization, mass growth in population,
sure,
those kind of things. But there are real dangers that go with that, where you can easily become a bureaucracy, easily become much more having kind of a corporate feel. And again, when those things happen, it's not long before you get lawyers who say, don't admit that. And you get PR people saying, that's not a good look. And you need a lot of moral courage to say we need to grapple openly and honestly with sin in our midst.
But I do think, Ken, it's perfectly reasonable to ask, is there something systemic wrong? I mean, when you keep having recurrences of the same problems, I think it's perfectly reasonable to ask it. And I don't believe in asking, well, should we change the structure of the church that Christ gave us? No, in no way, we don't have the power or authority to do that, and it wouldn't do us any good if we could. But the way we live out those structures, the way we understand the role of a bishop, I certainly think we could change it.
Even things like the role of lay boards, it's serving as like a strong advisory committee or more, those kind of things to get more eyes on the problem. Can be very helpful, practical solutions.
I really enjoyed that conversation there to wrap up, Ken. If you hang on, I'd love to send you a copy of Joe's book, the early church was the Catholic Church, just because Joe's here. You know, he's sitting right next to me. I'm not going to give away another book.
On a brighter note, Carlo's up next. So if this was super depressing, we've got good news. There's a game coming up.
It's not just Carlo, too. It's Carlo as a super celebrity guest for the game show. So we're about to have some fun, Joe. You should hang around. Because we have fun on a Friday afternoon when we do the game show. That's coming up right after this. In the meantime, I should tell you right now, a whole bunch of stuff is on sale, including Joe's book, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church, over at shop.catholic.com. You can even get Joe's book in bulk for just $3 a copy. Great one to give out to your fellow parishioners at Easter. shop.catholic.com.